Hello, welcome to another Cage Club Revisited. This one of these times, Mike, I'm going to remember what episode number it is. Not today.
Well, I think it should be a running gag that you never know.
It is a running gag, but I don't mean it to be. It's just, it is what it is.
I say we keep it up and pretend like we didn't agree to keep it up. It seems like you forgot each time.
Let's cut this out. All right, it's episode 23. We are doing The Wicker Man, a big one. The Wicker Man from 2006, yes. The remake.
Okay.
The wonderful, wonderful film. We are watching the DVD. Wait, which version are we watching? Because there's two versions.
Okay, so this is the non-theatrical. This is the extended version with shocking alternate ending.
Yes.
All right, so
it's the one with the bees.
This is considered now the quintessential version. This is just, you know, the Wicker Man.
This is canon.
All right, I'm going to hit play.
All right, press play. We have, as always, we have Cage Club Movie Bingo. If you go to cageclub.me/games, you can download your own bingo card, play along. It's,
There you go.
We'll see if we win. I think
Warner Brothers?
This is a pretty big movie.
Yes.
I think we might have a winner.
Pretty soon, too. A lot of stuff happens very quickly in this movie, also. We're going to have to try and keep up. Should I turn it up a little, too?
Sure.
So far, we have 3 production logos.
I have Saturn Films. So we added last time Cage's producer, Saturn Films. I think this is before Saturn Films. I think this is...
Nope, here we go. Saturn Films.
Is it Saturn Films?
This is a Cage production.
Oh, hell yeah. Check it off. a woman is attacked. I know I'm going to get that one later. So we are joined today. We teased this a little bit last time. We are joined today by a couple... members of the Bergen Record, the finest newspaper in North Jersey. We are joined by Chris and Anne. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
So, you may not know, but there are multiple Cage movies where he punches or kicks a woman.
Ooh.
Just straight up, just not like sugar-coated, just like, bam. So, at the end of this movie, he will punch a woman in the face.
Ah. Does she have it coming? Or is she just a lady?
He thinks she does, but she's totally in the right.
This is a crazy movie. So this is a remake of a 1973 cult classic movie. This is from 2006.
Yes.
That
movie, very... tonally very different than this movie, the original.
So the problem with this movie, in the grand scheme of things, is that supposedly the director, Nicolas Cage, wanted to make a very black, very dark comedy. And everybody else on set was like, oh no, we're making a drama. So there's two very different tones that do not align at all.
There's two different schools of thought going on in this movie. So that's why it doesn't seem to work.
But that said, we genuinely love it.
Was this terribly deeply panned?
This is why they considered one of his best worst movies.
So this is Cop Cage.
Cage
is a cop. He's been a cop multiple times.
He's a motorcycle cop? He's got a motorcycle cop.
He is a motorcycle cop.
Awesome.
Everything's not going to be okay, which he will learn very soon.
Cage driving. Cross that off.
Sunglasses. Right away, though, it's about to go down.
Yeah. I mean, he looks the part. So here's one thing that we've learned. And so this is going to be a weird Cage Club Revisited in that we're sort of talking to you, the listener. But we're also talking to Chris and Anne. But we found that Cage, more so than just about any other actor, can really do every genre. And, he looks the part. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not you think he's a good actor, whether you think this movie is good or not, he looks like he could be a motorcycle cop, which, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, I mean, the uniform makes the man, so I feel like he pulls it off very well.
Manners
make
the man.
Yeah.
And shoes.
And shoes. He also...
Oxford's before bros.
Oh, no.
That is so cool. I still love that he scoops the baby doll without slowing down.
Yeah, because it's the Black Widow move from the second Avengers movie where she picks up Cap's shield. I was like, oh, that's the Wicker Man. I'm sitting in the theater going, oh, that's from the Wicker Man.
I thought you were going to spoil the fact that this is actually his daughter.
No. But, the baby doll on the side of the road kind of thing is just... That's the ultimate metaphor for the entire movie right there.
Pretty much.
No, but this takes place, in modern times. I can't... That's the one thing about this I wasn't sure.
I think so.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was, in the 70s or something.
Well, the cars are old.
Right.
I don't know.
All right.
It's a movie beyond space and time. So that's actually Cage's daughter. This is a spoiler for the movie. He doesn't know it's his daughter, but he's going to be sort of drawn into this whole mystery on this island that's purely populated by women with no men around. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that.
Yeah, he's sort of, he's being lured. They're fishing for Cage right now, basically, is what they're doing.
So the doll dropped on purpose to bring him here.
But we're never sure if what happens next is on purpose or not. Because it's very jarring, and it's very dramatic, and it's about to happen. Joey, do you remember what I'm talking about?
I think so. So what's weird about this, Chris, is that, you know, we've mentioned this a couple times before, is that, like, this is now the third time I've seen this movie. Oh,
there we go.
Yeah, and now they're just dead.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not a dark comedy at all.
No, it's
just
like,
not funny.
Right, like, it's trying to start out as a sincere horror film or dark thriller of some kind. I said trying. Fire will become, I feel like that becomes a big theme too later in the movie.
Oh yeah, there's going to be fire coming back. This is a very elemental movie in that regard.
What's kind of cool is, like, this starts so grounded in the real world, and then it really goes, by the end, you're in a fairy tale, I feel like. You know, people dressed up in bizarre costumes, having tea in the middle of a field, you know, it's just all this imagery.
We gotta say, that's a great cold open.
That is a nice cold open. Nice. I like when the title is also, like, an artistic title, like, it's not just font, it's, like, the actual poster. But yeah, by the end of this movie, it's gonna be fairy tale land.
So now he has, this is like his PTSD, sort of, right? He's like, is he off the job now? Is that what this is?
He's taking some time because of that very incident.
Yeah, because, you know, he could have saved that little girl and didn't save the little girl.
Plus, I also feel like that's, you know, if you've involved in that kind of accident, you're going to want some time off, maybe? It's very traumatic.
You got to stay busy somehow. But, like, this is the third time I've seen this movie now, and I've never seen, you know, Lawrence of Arabia or It's a Wonderful Life. Like, there are movies. I'm going to see Cage movies. Like, by the time I die, I will have seen every Cage movie probably four or five times, and I still might never see, like, good movies. Mm.
Yeah, I haven't seen Lawrence of Arabia either, so, you know, I've seen the first 20 minutes. I haven't seen Gandhi.
See,
I feel like Gandhi is like a massive hole in my in my list there. But yeah, I think something else to pay attention to, I think blonde people in this movie are, like, sort of sinister, right? Like, because when we get to the island, there's way more blonde people.
Yeah.
And the blonde people, he just interacts with blonde women before he gets there. Like, that's it. I don't know if that's something, but I throw it all out there while we're doing these commentaries.
Well, you know, like, so the thing with the podcast is that we talk however long we need to talk about it, and then we edit it down, and we edit stuff out. You know, if there's gaps, if there's pauses, if we're not sure what we want to say, if there's dead air, whatever. Here, this is meant to be, I still don't know who's listening. These are meant to be listened to while you watch the movie, so there are stretches where Mike and I just don't talk. I'm like, well, can't edit that out, because, like, there's the movie happening. And so, you know, there's reason to throw things out there, just because you got to fill the air somehow.
So one idea I came up with just now, as a matter of fact.
About this movie?
No, well, about these commentaries, something we might be able to do in the future. So, you know, because now we watch them with the subtitles on, just so we could keep track. Like, if we read them out loud, if we read the movies. I think that comes from my podcast, though. Maybe I should explain.
Your novelization?
In my podcast, I also read the novelizations of the movies that I watch, and I have, like, a session at the end where I do, like, a book club, and I read passages from the book.
You would not believe the insanity. Like, we just recorded a Resident Evil. Yeah. So as far as I know, Mike wasn't reading a lot of books, and then he started a podcast, and now he's just reading garbage books. Like, I guess it's a step in the right direction.
So I've read all of these since December. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, like 12 books, all pretty much.
But that is the novelization of Superman 3, the novelization of Jaws the Revenge, a.k.a. Jaws 4, Rocky 3, Resident Evil Extinction. Like, it's honestly remarkable the amount of time that, no offense, Mike, that Mike wastes with these garbage books.
But they make, you gotta admit, they make for a good show. Like, you were just on my last episode, you seem to like that session.
Oh, no, it was great, until you got to the thing, what was the incredibly, like, sexist...
Oh, there was a few, actually. There was the backstory of the characters, real quickly, where one was a cop.
So in the movie, there are... In Resident Evil Extinction, It's an island off the coast of California. Summer Isle.
Yeah, that was a huge... Also, he's going to... He's going to go over... He'll cross county lines, and he'll have no jurisdiction where he will claim to have jurisdiction.
Arrests the shit out of people and other people's...
He's investigating. He's trying to get to the bottom of, like, what's going on here.
But had they already... Have they mentioned an island yet? Or is that the first way they mentioned an island?
So I think he got a letter. I think we missed a scene where he got that letter, which is from his ex-girlfriend or something, right? And it's like,
yeah,
hey, I'm out on Summer's Isle or whatever. I think he's trying to figure out what that is. Because he's a cop, but he's not really a cop right now because he's sort of on leave or whatever, and so...
And at this point, I'm not even sure that it's an actual island, per se. Like, it ends up to be an island, but that's just sort of the brand name, I think, for their honey, Summer Isle, like, at first. So, yeah, it's... This movie is super misleading. there's a lot of red herrings and things, but most of it's like red herrings.
Well, as we learned from Snake Eyes and was hammered home in Seeking Justice, you need five people for a conspiracy, and there are way more than five people in on this conspiracy here.
Cage is pretty much going to be the only one not.
Yeah, eventually when he gets to Summer's Isle, it will be the entire movie against him. Like, it's man versus the world, basically. And they're all just women who essentially want to kill him.
And I kind of like that as a movie, though, the idea that the main character is totally out of the loop in a lot of ways.
He's a real dum-dum.
but thinks he's in the right, too.
He is in the right.
Well, sort of. He shouldn't really be... I mean, they are luring him there. He shouldn't be trespassing.
Oh, no, but he's not wrong.
No, technically you're right.
It's not like they're wrong and he's right. It's just that he's not wrong.
Yeah, I guess it's...
They lure him to an island to kill him.
But from their perspective, they're just trying to have a better harvest next season. So you see what I'm saying?
They do need to
sacrifice.
From
a certain point of view.
Yes.
They're just, you know, continuing their culture.
But why is he the only one in this movie who hasn't done his hair?
He's like off the job still, right? I think so. Like, he hasn't...
He's done makeup, but his hair is just like, yeah, I don't care.
Well, so the hair, as I'm sure you know, Nicolas Cage and the hair have a very tenuous history.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's been crazy.
A lot of efforts to maintain.
And a lot of styles, like...
But what's sort of weird, I don't know if it's better hair plugs or, you know, Rogaine or what, but, like, it's really come back. Like, it's been better lately. They're, like, in the mid-2000s where we are, it's sort of the low, it's like the...
It gets to a point where he's really going bald.
Like,
it's weird. Like, it gets to a point where it's, like, the point of no return. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, look
but
at it in this scene.
Returns.
But he returns, it's amazing. That's what's amazing. Like, in this scene, his hair looks completely different from the last scene. I think he's also a kind of guy who will say, you know, I had my hair like this in the last scene. Let's do it something different to just keep mixing it up a little bit.
So now he's on the ferry to Summer's Isle, and he sees a girl who might be his daughter. There's a lot of question marks here. The other thing to keep in mind with these commentaries is that we've seen these movies before, but then we just start talking...
So a train just ran over a little girl on a ferry.
He's also dressed like he's going to a funeral.
Yeah. Mm. That's just his detective garb.
And he's in a weird kind of mourning where... He witnessed someone die, but he's not positive if it was his kin or not.
I don't think he knows at all.
He doesn't know yet.
He doesn't have any indication that that was his daughter.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, the other thing is that, like, we start talking about something else, we look away, we don't read the subtitles, and then we're like, wait, we kind of know what's happening, but, like, why are we here?
We have to reorient ourselves a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
So these aren't really incredibly helpful commentaries. But, you know, we never thought they would be.
I feel like there's... generally two types, even with professional ones, when you buy, like, the Blu-rays of people and stuff, like, you get the technical commentaries where you have, like, the producer and stuff, and they're like, oh, well, this took this many hours, and we did this on this day, and this was like that. And then you have, like, when the director just gets on and bullshits and just kind of, like, shoots the shit and
then
talks
there's
about,
us.
Well, I feel like these are way more in that vein, where you're just hanging out with us while you're watching the movie.
The real question we have to answer is that, so we put these out every 2 weeks. So when we did the first run of Cage Club, we did three a week because we are masochists and sadists and whatever. Like, we just wanted to, like, give ourselves all of the work. And we also were dumb in that we didn't do any ahead of time. We're like, the first one's coming out Tuesday, let's record it on Saturday. So we had no build-up. We're just like, oh, this thing that we've never done before, that we don't know how it's going to go, that we're all trying to figure out, like, what everything is, like, let's just... let's just do it.
Yeah,
and
we did. Trial by fire.
And about 3 weeks in, I was like, Mike, I don't know if I can keep doing 3 weeks. He's like, let's just try it. And then, like, a couple weeks later, I was like, I got it. Like, it just became part of my life.
And then I even said, like, you know, we could always pull back. And you're like, no, I got it. It's like, committed. I'm too into this right now. Like, I can't shift until we're done. It's like, I totally understand.
But now we're doing the Revisited. We're putting one out every 2 weeks. And so, you know, in a couple years when we catch up, I guess we're just going to go back and
rewatch them. Yeah, that's what I figured. I mean, kind of like with your Fast and Furious podcast where you will watch those movies forever on a loop. Like, I feel like in a way we'll never stop watching the Cage movies either. We'll just start over and figure out a way to talk about them.
And in case you're wondering, there's almost always a Cage movie on TV. So if you have, like, if the more movie channels you have, the higher probability that there's a Cage movie on at any point. That said, download our Cage Club bingo card at cageclub.me/games.
Which I'm doing exceedingly poor on today. I'm really surprised, though, when I look over my card. I got a good card, and this is a good movie for this.
Oh, Cage wears a hat. Got that. Wacky wardrobe, not yet.
This is the way he gets to the island?
Yeah, so this is how he...
It's a ferry to a plane.
He sneaks...
To a plane to walk through the...
To climb up a cliff.
He sneaks in.
So here, this is one of the all-time great... We're like a minute away from one of the all-time great Cage lines. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
What's in the bag?
Well, so the island doesn't take kindly to...
Outsiders.
And,
or men.
Or men in general. It's primarily a all-woman island. It's like a commune, in a way. It's a cult, basically.
It is a cult. You know, have you been following the Smallville sex cult?
What? No,
you know
Smallville, the TV show? Yeah. Oh, the lady from Smallville. Oh, I thought, okay. Yeah,
No. Yeah, not related to Smallville.
All right, I thought it was
like a couple weeks ago I saw,
based on this show.
I saw Kristen Kreuk was questioned by...
Yeah.
Like, and she was like, oh, I have nothing to do with this. And then, like, Allison Mack got arrested.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, this is a thing?
Yeah. Oh, here we go. This is a, he states his business here. It's as if they've never heard of law enforcement.
Here we go. Here we go. We never get an answer to his question either, by the way. The question he's about to ask?
I have a theory.
So the bag is dripping...
Great line read.
Shark?
In what world does your mind default to shark? What's in the bag? A shark or something?
I think it's... because we find out later that he's been murdered. Maybe it's part of the pilot that dropped them off? Maybe? I don't know.
Oh, no, because he comes back later. No, the plane's there.
The plane's there, but the guy's... The
pilot's gone.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But would they have time?
I'm crossing off X-Files connection because he's investigating.
That's one of the most tangential connections we've come up with yet. Like, just
well, I also have,
like,
Twin Peaks connection, which I have not crossed off yet. But so the bingo card is assembled from things that we know from different things. But as Mike and I are watching these movies, we're like, oh, we should have one where, like, the movie takes place on a holiday. Like, which here it's May Day. That would be a good...
Oh, that's right. Yes, yeah, it is May Day. Because I also wanted to see if there were enough holiday films to do, like, a show about
year.
It, an entire, like, one a month, like, starting with January. And even though it's not called May Day the movie, this qualifies as the May Day film.
You could do Selma for Martin Luther King.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You could do New Year's Eve.
For what holiday would that be for? Christmas, right?
You could do the pie-making film Labor Day.
That's a... I haven't seen it yet. That's the J-Lo movie?
No. It's Kate Winslet and Josh Brolin.
Oh, right. Okay, Kate Winslet.
Where he's a criminal, and they make pies together.
And he's looking for the gems.
Sneaks off into the night.
He likes to snap a lot. And
I know, he's very aggressive in that movie.
I still haven't seen it. But I reference it a lot, and I get it wrong all the time.
Yeah, you do that with a couple. Like, there's not too many, but there's a couple movies that you're just, like, you just don't know what they're about, and I love that you just keep... They're in your reference wheelhouse.
Never seen them.
Don't know why.
Oh, man.
Okay. So now this is his ex-girlfriend, I think, right?
Or yes.
Yeah.
Well, this... Okay, so this is the... Right. She's the one looking for Cage.
Yes.
She's the one that you find out sent the feelers out.
She's the one who looks like nobody else on the island.
That yes. too, right. The only one that, right. So her story turns out to be she was born on Summer Island, and lots of children are like this. They are sent out into the world to live amongst us. And then,
it's like a real Rumspringa situation.
Yeah, yeah. And then they sort of like imprint on somebody or like develop a relationship. In this case, she developed a relationship with Cage, disappears, and then through a set of mysterious circumstances is reunited with her back on the island, only to be burned alive at the end of the movie.
Oh.
And that's like their MO. That's what the women of this island do.
Alright, Cage, take a sip. Oh, this is an adaptation. Crossing that off because it's an adaptation of a previous film. Take a sip. Cage drinks alcohol. So if we get a flashback... Oh, we did have a flashback on the boat. He flashed back to when the girl
got
killed.
Well, was that a flashback or a vision?
Is there a difference?
Oh, there's a big difference.
it's a
difference
a flashback,
between winning bingo and losing bingo.
It's true. We're really generous with the bingo cards until one of us is about to win, and then we really clamp
kind of
down.
Like, yeah, turn the screws a little hard.
Like, yeah, I really wonder happen. At what point his character realizes that there's no men around.
Okay, there we go. They're in Washington now. So there's got to be an island up there, right?
Yeah, there's islands off the coast of Washington.
You know, undisclosed ones that...
Summer Isle, for one.
Yeah. No one checks up on them.
So, Chris, you've never seen this movie before. That's amazing.
I've never heard of this movie.
That's amazing.
You might want to... I'm not saying you have to do it, like, soon or anything, but you might, over the summer one day, want to check this out and, like, sit down with a box...
This one or the original?
No, this one.
Oh.
And, like, watch it with no distraction.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I can't... it's fascinating, and then there's... I should be paying attention to you guys, but then this is just...
It's so intriguing.
Well, that's the thing, like, you know, when we have guests come over to, like, with friends come over to watch these movies, like, they just get engrossed in the movies. Like, no, you need to talk. Like, the point of this is, like, to have a dialogue about whatever's on screen, not just to watch the movie. Like, we've seen this movie. We love this movie.
I'm still trying to figure some stuff out about it, though. Like, that's
I don't know that you'll ever be able to.
No, but that's what I like about it. It's unsolvable. To a degree, you know, and there's a charm about that. Like, it's not like trying to be unsolvable. I feel like it's giving you everything you need to know. It believes it's doing that, but I think we've seen too many movies to know that it is certainly not the case.
You mentioned imprint before. The next Contenders episode is about Twilight, so.
Oh, don't they imprint on each other on that?
Oh, well, yeah, you so like on a baby.
That's the weirdest thing of that entire series. I mean, forget about that the teenage vampire is actually, like, in his hundreds or something. He just looks like a teenager, and he's attracted to teenage girls, but he's, like, 100 years old.
There's that joke in What We Do in the Shadows, which was just picked up for series. Did you see that?
Yeah, yeah.
Where, like, you know, you become, like, you look the way that you do when you become a vampire,
yeah, yeah.
That's why I look like I'm a teenager, and it's like a 40-year-old Jemaine Clement. Like, it's just like, that's why I look like a teenager. Like, that's... the joke I think that Twilight could have gone for, but didn't. Oh, since the last time we recorded one of these,
uh-huh.
We have a new show.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, do we have any other business? I forgot to ask.
Do we have business?
Business. So what show?
High School Slumber Party.
Right.
You were on the first episode.
I know. Well, I know. I mean, don't explain to me.
Oh, this is like answer.
You're supposed... No, I thought you were announcing.
Oh, yeah, we have a new show.
I was on that show?
You were on that show.
I totally remember.
Every Friday, High School Slumber Party, hosted by Brian Rodriguez of PSL of Hoffman, which has now ended. He and guests and friends will go watch high school movies about high school. So,
yep.
First two episodes apparently about Better Off Dead, because you guys apparently didn't shut up about it.
Oh, man. That
rambled on forever.
That was a long night. That took forever. But that was a lot of fun. I mean, hey, you'll hear revelations about my high school years if you haven't listened to Now and
That's
Again,
the best
Volume
part
4.
Of these. Like, just sometimes, like, Michael just say something like, oh, yeah, like, not this, but like, oh, yeah, I was in Vietnam. And just like, wait, we've talked, like, 10 hours a week for 3 years, and I don't know this. Like, how is this just coming up casually?
Occasionally I'll drop a bomb, a personal
just like,
revelation or something.
Where did that come from?
One of them was actually...
Were you in Vietnam?
No. Well, not in the war. I mean, the country. one time when I did it, the first time...
Oh, you accidentally...
It was
yourself.
Muted, so there's a real secret on one of the episodes.
Yeah.
But it's not that big a secret.
No. It was a mind-blowing revelation to me, but it's not really super important in the general, in the grand scheme of things.
No.
But yeah, just like offhand, I'd be like, oh yeah, like X, Y, or Z. I'm just like, wait, what? Like, how am I hearing about this for the first time while we're watching Seeking Justice?
Yeah, no, you're right. It would be like if you were just like, oh, and by the way, I have another brother.
Oh, by the way, I have a child. You might not know.
Which I don't. Yet.
Yet.
Never know.
I guess it's kind of built into both Nick Cage and movies. I just feel it needs... It bears mentioning that...
Oh, bears mentioning.
Way inappropriately hot for Nick Cage.
Oh!
Oh, yeah. Oh,
there is,
okay.
There's a case called Bingo card. In Impossibly Attractive Woman finds Cage irresistible. Because that is something that happens in just about every movie. That's just like oh.
Not even just mildly attractive, like, hey, good looking, but like, I
like
need
Jessica
to
Biel,
jump
like,
you.
Like, Jessica Biel, like... cannot get enough Nicolas Cage at this point in his career. Just
like prancing around.
Because he's
a
still
towel.
A leading man, and so like you need to have that like love story to hit the four quadrants or whatever. Just like, well, yeah, I mean, like, we love him, but at the same time, like, why are you so smitten by this guy?
And yeah, because he's horrid.
Well, that's harsh.
I mean, just physically.
Well, that's
I'm sure as a person.
So early Cage is. When he was like 18 years old, he had basically LeBron James syndrome, where he was like a man out of high school, and he still looks older than I do now when he was 18.
Yeah,
and just, you know, cut and like shirtless in every movie, and had messed up teeth, but otherwise.
But like he was literally a young man,
like
he was a man, but a like young in age, and like it took him like it seems like it took him 15 years to change any kind of look whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know.
But now, you know, he's no longer necessarily... I mean, he is still, in a lot of movies, a leading man. Mm-hmm. But he's also sort of now finally embracing, like, the character actor, like, the supporting actor role. And that's great. Like, he doesn't have to have, like, this, you know, forced-in love story. Like, he's in Snowden, which is not a great movie. But in Snowden, he's great. Like, he plays Snowden's mentor. And he's just, like, this, like, retired general or whatever. And he's just, like, this got, like, this crazy tinkerer in his office. And just got, like, three scenes. They're great. And the rest of the movie's whatever, but he's great in it.
Yeah, and heavy chain smoking in that one.
Oh, this is a flashback.
Oh, there we go. There's the flashback
Bingo.
Of the vision, though. It's a flashback.
What's the... Hit the triangle. What's the time?
Timestamp.
26:21.
And the flashback continues.
Now, would you say that... Oh, the girl's gone, though. I mean, I'm going to get a woman's attack later for sure.
Ben Affleck? The Lost podcast.
So we also were going to do a Ben Affleck podcast, and then within the span of 36 hours, like three different news stories came out. We're like, "Oh, this guy is a creep."
Literally, the eve we recorded one episode, and the eve of the next episode, all this news broke about Ben Affleck being a
just
super
him being
creep.
Creepy with reporters and him
and
inappropriately
like,
touching all
and
different
being
stuff.
And so we were like, "We got to call."
And we're
it
like,
audible.
"Oh, there's going to be and like nothing else has come out about it, which I guess is good for him."
But I still feel like we dodged a bullet there.
Yeah. Well, now we're doing Charlize, and it's trying.
I'm having fun watching her performances, though. I think more than I'd have watching Affleck.
You know, I don't know if you saw the post on Twitter, but yesterday was Natasha Richardson's birthday.
No.
So, I mean, if she was still alive.
Right.
But, waking up in Reno.
Oh, and that episode came out.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Yeah.
So.
That, if nothing else, is just a time capsule.
Fine.
Her performance.
So the biggest fight that Mike and I have ever gotten into on a podcast was on the Charlize Theron.
I thought of another one we had, but it wasn't this big. Street Kings on Keanu was pretty big.
Oh, well, yeah.
But this was like this was a real.
Sometimes, like in a movie, I'm just like, oh no, I have no interest in this. And Mike's like, no, it's not that bad. Like, let me try to explain it to you. This one, I was like, so there's a Charlize Theron movie called Waking Up in Reno, which I don't know if you know Letterboxd, but Letterboxd is a social media for films. So you can, you know, log what you see, you can rate, review, you can follow other people. It's sort of like
Diary,
Instagram or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can do lists and everything. So if you go to an actor's page on Letterboxd, you can see the default sort is by popularity. So like Mad Max is like the new Mad Max is like the most popular movie on Letterboxd. Like more people have seen that than anything else. So like if you look on Charlize Theron, like the first one, the Mad Max, and it goes down like the next most popular of all of it. So her least popular movie of all time, just based on the number of people have seen, is this movie, Waking Up in Reno. And it's got bad Metacritic and bad IMDb, and we're just like, oh boy. And then I watched it, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like, it's just, it's like this, like, road trip goofball movie with, like, her and Patrick Swayze and Billy Bob Thornton and Natasha Richardson. And I was like, it's dumb, they're dumb, but it's amazing. And I go on the podcast, and Mike is like, I hate this movie, I hate you now for liking it.
No, did I say that?
No. But basically, that was what you, that was reading between the lines.
I alluded to this. Yeah, I almost walked off the show, I think.
I know,
at that
and
point.
We had a guest on, and she was like, oh no, like, she's like, this is a bad movie, but like, I liked it, and I was so glad that Mad Holly Gore was on, because she defended me, and I was like, no, Mike,
but
this
she
is
also
terrible.
Defended me, too. She's like, yes, it's bad, but Mike, you're losing your mind today.
I know.
I was like, yeah, I am, but...
And so then, for like, the next six things we recorded on six different shows, Mike had this apology tour. He's like, look, I was having a bad day. It wasn't personal.
But also, what else happened is the three movies we watched after that were infinitely worse.
Oh, yeah.
Like
we watched
Italian
Job,
the other thing.
Which is
like, my whole
bad.
Perspective shifted after a week, and I was like, oh, you know, in retrospect, like, Waking Up in Reno is actually quite good, and I would go back and give it another shot. I'm not saying I love it or anything, but compared to the Italian Job.
Oh, the Italian Job, yeah.
I'd rather watch Waking Up
what
in Reno
is
again.
What is important is, we were saying this to you before we started recording, that, like, in Charlie's movies, she's rarely with another woman at all, and when there's another woman on screen, she's not, like, usually great, just because Hollywood and movies are not great for women. But in Waking Up in Reno, there is a true, like, especially for this kind of movie, it's mind-blowing still. There's a truly genuine female relationship between her and Natasha Richardson's character. And I'm like, in this stupid movie, like, there's, like, this genuine heart and empathy and pathos and everything. And I was like, this is remarkable. And Mike's like, yeah, but fuck that.
Well, I liked it. It's just in the wrong movie for me. I was like, they're throwing it into the middle of this, like, hillbilly comedy. And so, it was a great moment, and they're great characters, but I just feel like they're in the wrong place.
The whole movies are taking a road trip from, like, New Orleans or whatever up to Reno to see Truckosaurus. Robosaurus.
Yeah, Robosaurus.
Which is like a giant, like, you know, car-eating dinosaur at, like, a monster truck rally. And that's the movie. They're just going there, and, like, the things happen on the way. And Mike's like, this is a dumb movie. I'm like, why does, like, this need to have a plot? Like, it's just, like, goofy. And could not win Mike over. So he's he apologized on this show. He apologized on Watch the Throne. He apologized on Cage Club.
Yeah, you know, I made the rounds, you know, because...
But now it's over.
Ultimately, I just, you know... Intro Lili Zilbieski. Forgot she was in this movie.
Now, Cage is on screen with an animal. Do you think that little bear is the animal? I mean, he's going to be in the bear suit.
Well,
he's going to be bees later.
You were excited by the use of the word bear earlier.
Yeah.
And yes, that is foreshadowing there, because he will put on a bear suit in this movie before it is over. He is going to run around.
Do you watch Silicon Valley?
I don't. I've seen the first season.
So there was one episode this year where Gavin Belson, who's like the CEO of basically on Google on that show, like the main competitor, and he's like, he has, like, one of those squeezy bears, and he's like, the bear is sticky with honey, and he, like, leaves. And everybody in the company's like, what does that mean? Like, what could that possibly mean? And then he comes back, and, like, the bear is still sticky with honey. But
yeah. I just remembered in high school, like, for some reason, kids thought it would be cool to, like, try and make a bong out of one of those, but, like, you could never get them entirely clean, so they'd always be sticky, and they would never work. So, little Cage Club tidbit for you guys. Don't make a bong out of the honey bear.
You know, we don't have a smoking game, because we don't endorse that, because that is illegal. But we do have a drinking game.
Yes, we do.
You could also play Nicolas Cage Movie Bingo as a drinking game, I guess.
I guess you could. I wouldn't recommend it, because you'd probably last, like, 5 minutes.
Well, I mean, you would last longer than you do on the Joe 2 drinking game.
I suppose. But you'd have to do, like, because right by now, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like, even I have 6 marks right now. If I had taken 6 shots or something.
Well, you don't do a shot for each one.
No,
I think
I'm not a big drinker,
so or whatever.
Gotta delegate the rules.
You're not a big drinker until we all get together at Gold Sounds.
Okay, so that was a lot of fun, and I had not, like, drank like that in, like, 3 years, and I was pounding shit that day. I don't know where I was coming from.
We have probably about a dozen different hosts on the Cage Club Podcast Network, and I do most of the podcasts either with Mike or with my other friend Joe, and Joe jokingly refers to himself as, like, a functioning alcoholic. You know, he drinks a lot, and he is also just a really bad influence. And so we were at this bar with a live event, and Joe was like, oh, they have a shot in beer for $6. Do this with me. And I was like, no, I'm not. I have to drive. And Mike was like, I got a ride here. And Mike got drunker faster than I've seen.
Well, also because my ride bought me drinks, too.
Oh,
she was like, I got to go run an errand. Now. Here's my card. Run up a tab. I was like, okay. because she's like, because you never
wow.
go out. So I think I even put some of Joe's on my tab. I was like,
let's write up her tab.
So, but for the podcast I do with Joe, they're all the they're the sort of the hunk avenue. So with the Zac Efron, the Channing Tatum, the Ryan Gosling, the Fast and Furious, we put together a drinking game, but it's specifically based on things that we say basically every episode. So when we reference Mike, or when we reference another podcast, or when we get an argument over how you pronounce the word GIF, like all these things that happen literally every time you're supposed to take a drink, and it's encouraged to make you drink, and so it's just it's dangerous. It's unsafe.
There is a warning though. There is a yeah.
Don't drink like Joe too. Oh yeah.
Back to the movie. I feel like I'm going to throw that in every once in a while.
But the thing is, like, we haven't missed anything.
No, technically
he's
not.
Just he's talking to women.
He's
on
wandered.
The
he's been wandering around, getting
asking
nowhere,
getting no answers,
asking dumb questions. This is also I haven't seen The Handmaid's Tale, but it seems like kind of the opposite of The Handmaid's Tale in that.
Oh yeah, that's kind of a good
the
call.
The creepy culture is a matriarchy.
Oh, look at that deep reading of this film.
No, that isn't. It's a whole other level I didn't even consider. But
that's good. That's solid.
Oh my gosh!
I'm coming back.
So Nicolas Cage is the Elizabeth Moss of this world.
Yeah, he's like the hero, and here they've got like what in real life?
Yeah,
what matriarchy would be this dispirited and angry and
right
one that
spooky.
Still has to live in a world of men, probably.
But they got a whole island.
They do have a whole
it's
island.
A gorgeous island.
But it's also being infiltrated by this man that they have no interest in. You know. Talking to.
We find out it's run by one. There's actually a leader to the island. So I'm starting to wonder if they are bound by her will in some way. You know, she's the one that's like, we have to do this for the harvest, and everyone agrees. And it's been.
I also do think that like it's a very tenuous time. Like there, he's here because they need to sacrifice him. Like things have not been going well on the island.
Right, right.
So they're it's collectively they're in a state of things could be going better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you only sacrifice people when things are going badly.
Yeah,
right. If he showed up and everyone was like happy, then.
There's the Mayday pole.
That's the only reference, I think, right? Because in the original one, I've only seen it once.
Oh, yeah, the original one, like, it's all about Mayday.
It's all, and they're running around the Maypole, and it's. Oh, Cajun school. Do you have school?
No, is school one?
Yeah, school is one. I have school. Because he's a professor in so many movies.
Oh, that's true.
He's got kind of professorial elbow patches.
Yeah, he like
so he can again. We found that he can really pull off teacher.
Yeah,
well.
Like as far as strictly looks, he just normally looks like a professor. To
but
me.
He's only like English or history. Like if you want him to do something else, it doesn't really work.
I also find
and
it
this is Jackie Sharp from House of Cards.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I remember this actress was in it. I was trying to remember what she was from before we put it on. Yeah, you know what is also always jarring to me? When you see Cage in real life, like, walking around, doing stuff, and things, he's more of like a biker, rocker type of guy, you know? He's always got, like, he's got all these tats, he's always got, like, a exotic type of, like, leather coat on or something.
Do you think he and Keanu would get along? Because they're both bikers.
I think so, yeah. I mean, again, like, it's my mission, and, I mean, if I could get both of them in one movie together... Before I expire, I will die a happy
So after we were doing this, we were having like a lot. We did all the Cage movies, we did all the Keanu movies, we did Shia LaBeouf, which surprisingly, great. Great.
Yeah, Shia LaBeouf did an art installation where he watched all of his own movies.
He did all my movies, so we did all his
So
movies.
We did that too. So we watched all of Shia LaBeouf's movies as well.
And we were going to put them all out the same day.
Did you get to do it in real time? Like, as he was doing it?
No.
Unfortunately
not.
Awesome.
No,
we released it on like 1 year anniversary of his... installation.
Yeah, and I think we did
one a day for 30 days.
Yeah, so we tried to get creative with it, at least, though.
But we found... So, basically, for every podcast, there's, like, one movie that we're like, how did more people not know about this? And for Shia LaBeouf, it's his first or second movie. It's called Monkey Business. And Monkey Business is a kid's movie, but there's murder. Like, it's straight up for kids, but there's murder. It's like a 90-minute movie that Mike and I talked about for 2.5 hours. Like, it is...
There's hacking. There's, like, children hackers.
You know, there's not, in a movie called Monkey Business, not really a monkey.
There's a monkey in it, but for, like,
for
one
probably
shot.
Not sex either.
No, no sex.
No, but...
But they are talking to that guy online, and there's a real sort of, like,
There's a creepy predatorial vibe to some of the, like, adult performances in it. It's one of the best worst movies ever out there.
It's
I think
amazing.
But then on the other side of the spectrum too, like you're saying, like Shia's most recent work
is
like,
great.
Like, yeah. He's really good in a lot of that stuff, but he gets written off because of his attitude a lot.
Is this the one we're talking about? The Company... No, yeah, The Company You Keep.
Yeah,
he's
Robert...
journalist in it, and it's great. Robert Redford wrote and directed
that movie, and Shia is good. And you have a journalism background, so you were like, hey, this is very much in line with, like, what I've been taught and, like, how you would go about doing it.
Yep.
And it's got kind of an All the President's Men sort of, like, vibe going on because of Redford and everything, and... Yeah, he's just very sort of understated in that. And again, like Cage, too, I feel like these guys get weighed down by their personal problems or personal image.
What's the problem is that, like, both Cage and Shia should be character actors, should be, like, and Brad Pitt, too. We haven't done a Brad Pitt podcast, but, like, they're great in these weirdo roles, but because of the way that Hollywood works or whatever, like, no, you're like a box office draw. You need to lead movies, you need to star in movies.
You can only be in big movies.
And so then all of a sudden you're in a movie that, like, you would be a better character elsewhere, or you would have a better thing, like, you know, Brad Pitt's early stuff, like in True Romance, where he plays
a guy on a couch.
Floyd, who's just a stoner on a couch eating cereal. Like, he's so good in that. But then because he's the most handsome man to ever walk the planet, they're like, oh, no, you can't be like a burnout on a couch. Like, you need to actually...
Yeah, and then, you know, you look at him now, and he's running around World War Z. It's like the last person you'd ever imagine to do a movie like that. But it's like he has to do big blockbuster movies. That's what he's getting offered.
But what we were saying is that we were doing all these different podcasts, and, like, we were never having crossovers. Like, Cage and Keanu have never been in a movie together. But then finally we got to Constantine for Shia, which we had covered for Keanu. We're like, finally, crossover there. But now that we've done, you know, now we have, like, 18 different shows, there's all sorts of crossovers, people all over the place and bleeding over.
Although it is, that's really a cool sort of, I don't know, an anomaly or something. Whatever, something you find while watching an entire body of someone's work, how often they collaborate with certain people and how well those that will work together.
Like, Cage was with Steve Buscemi in, like, four movies. And, like, you think about them, like, where are they ever together? But, like, it's, like, four movies
together. Yeah, and, like, Lawrence Fishburne as well. Yep. And then we found out with Charlize and Frances McDormand were in, like, two movies together.
Back to back, yep.
And then that's pretty great and stuff, so...
I mean, so what do you see with Nick Cage? Like, I mean, he's... We make fun of him because he's kind of ridiculous. But.
Well, and that's why we did the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we're like, we genuinely like him. The internet makes fun of him. Why?
What do you genuinely like about him?
He never, until recently a little bit, some things, but he never checks out of a movie. Like, whether the movie is good, whether the movie is bad, whether the movie, like, it makes sense, whether it doesn't, he's always fully committed.
Yeah, he commits.
He's able to do... every genre.
As opposed to, do you see actors who don't commit?
I mean, we love Keanu. We love Keanu. Well, and there are a lot of Keanu movies where it's just like...
Yeah, he kind of sleepwalks a couple times through a few movies. Yeah.
Okay, so I thought, I guess, but even Keanu guys like can't act.
Well, even, okay, so like Ed Norton. Okay, I think this is a good example. Like, I really love Ed Norton in a lot of stuff. Yep. Like, what was it, like the 13th Hour? I mean, even
25th
as... 25th Hour.
Rounders.
Rounders, right.
Fight Club,
yeah. Italian Job, he is the worst. He just doesn't have any interest. He doesn't want to be there.
Forced to do by the studio. He's like, I don't want to do this. At the end, the producer sent him a gift, and he returned and said, give it to somebody who would appreciate it. Like, he just gave this gift back and, like, did not care. And, like, Cage was in bad movies. Cage was never, like, you know, there's a lot of things, but he's always interesting to watch. You never know what you're going to get with him. And there's so much more. Like, people know this movie because there's a scene coming up in a little bit, the bees scene, which, even though if you've never seen this movie, you've probably seen him with the helmet on, with him screaming, not
it's
the bees,
a, it's
not
a big
the bees.
Meme, yeah.
People know that. People know him from Vampire's Kiss, like, screaming the alphabet. But there's, like, these weird movies that people don't know where he's genuinely great. And also, he won an Oscar. He's an Academy Award-winning actor.
So also, just so what people make fun of him for, which is... over-enthusiasm and crazy face.
Yeah.
Is the expression, is kind of the laughable expression of the quality you like.
Well,
and he takes these things, everything seriously.
We enjoy it because it's fun. It's fun, but there's more, we just know that there's more to it than just him losing his mind. And I feel like recently, in these smaller movies or whatever, this actually is sort of interesting. There's a movie that came out a couple years ago called The Trust with him and Elijah Wood. And it was these two directors, these brothers... It was their first film. And I saw it at South by Southwest because I was living in Austin at the time. And they said, you know, if you make a movie and get Cage in it, Cage will eat up your entire budget. Like, your entire budget goes to Cage. But if Cage is in it, people will see the movie. And so it's like a trade-off. Like, am I able to make a movie basically for no money and get Cage in it?
Hmm. Still. This still applies.
Still applies.
Yeah.
And also, that's like actually like a good movie and whatever. But... I feel like in a lot of movies lately, that have Cage in it that are either, you know, straight to on demand or whatever, there is a tendency to build up to that freak out scene so that that's how they can market it. And like that, when it feels tacked on, we're just like, oh, like that's now I know why it's here. Like at the end of this movie, what's the movie we just watched? The post-apocalyptic.
Oh, the Humanity Bureau.
The Humanity Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
He just freaks out at the end for no reason.
Yeah,
and we're just
of,
like, oh.
Just, yeah. It's just to kind of check off a box sometimes. Yeah.
But like they're able to take that and put it in a trailer and be like, look, it's a Cage you love. And then they just get like people who are drinking with their buddies on a Friday night, like, let's just watch this like bad Cage movie. And that is a bad Cage movie. I don't like that one. He loves that.
I liked it, but I mean, it's a bad movie, but it's in my wheelhouse.
It's this ironic, like, and I think in a lot of things, like in a lot of the internet, there's just like this irony that like we try to be as genuine as possible. I mean, like we love, like when things are cheesy, like the first movie that Charlize Theron was ever in was Children of the Corn 3, which is very bad.
Urban Harvest.
But
Urban Harvest, let me just... It's corn growing in the city.
Yeah.
Killing people.
And it's bad, but we like it. And we're not saying, like, oh, this is a great movie. We're like, oh, no, this is a bad movie, but, like, it's fun.
Yeah, it's
so
fun.
What
it's
do you, so that's part of it, too, is you guys genuinely like and bring earnest enjoyment to the, like, the off-gas of popular culture, like the stuff that people make fun of, because popular culture makes so much volume of stuff.
Yes.
Right.
A big chunk of it is bad.
Yeah, most things are bad.
A lot of it, yeah.
Right. And so, and only a little bit of it becomes The Handmaid's Tale or Westworld or anything like that.
Yeah.
So what do you like about bad things?
Well, that's a tricky one.
Why do you genuinely like things that are bad and that people make fun of?
A better answer to your question is that we don't think a lot of these things are actually bad.
Yeah, I think especially for Cage. Like, for me, like, I feel I grew up with him. Like watching his movies on HBO, and I mean, so like to me, he was always a good actor. But it wasn't until we started doing the show, and I really got a chance to sort of like analyze him and stuff, where I was like, I love this guy. Like, sure, I understand like he can be taken as a joke sometimes, and all this kind of thing, and I accept that, and I think that's fine and everything. But for me, deep down, like I don't know, he's operating on another level that a lot of people really aren't willing to like put themselves out there on. Like he's really putting himself on the line every time, and like that, I don't know, that's really admirable, and like that takes a lot of courage. And you see people, you know, I love Clooney, but you know what you're gonna get every time you see Clooney. There's always that chance that like you're gonna see something you've never seen before,
right.
And I don't know, I mean, I guess I'm just, I like things that entertain me. If the general public thinks that that is quote unquote something bad, I just think it's a matter of taste. Like, I can understand something not being quite as good as the next thing, but if I'm happy after watching it and entertained by it, then I'm going to consider it something I like.
And I also hate the term guilty pleasures. Like, I don't think that should be a thing. Like, I don't think you should be embarrassed by what you like. Like, this could be like a, oh, like, I know The Wicker Man's bad, but I like it. Like, that's my guilty pleasure. Like, no, just, like, you like it. Like, I like this movie. I know it's not good. And I think there's definitely a difference between, like, bad and not good. Like, there's just, like we're not saying this is good, but we're just saying it's not bad. And I think that there were some interesting choices made, and that Cage was doing a thing and committing to certain things. And, you know, maybe that's not good, but it's fun. And I think, you know, we've done across the network, not just me and Mike, but, you know, all in all, like, 500 episodes. And I think the more you watch, like, whether you're talking to them or not, but the more you watch things, the more you think about things, the more you're able to realize why things, like, even if you can't articulate, you, like, know that something is good and sort of know why it's good or why something works or why something is interesting. And, you know, we see that with Cage. We saw that with Shia. Shia's doing everything crazy. And the same thing, believe it or not, Channing Tatum is able to commit to things and also actually genuinely act. And it's like, oh, this guy that people know as Magic Mike is actually like a great actor. And then you watch, you know, This Is the End, where the movie where like everybody dies and they go to heaven or whatever, and he's playing a bondage gimp dog just like on all fours, doesn't like in a full leather bodysuit. You don't even know it's him, and like it's just he's willing to commit to it. It's just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like the one guy you think would be so vain, and just like completely the opposite or something about it. But
then you watch like a Keanu Reeves movie, and you're like, oh, unless he's a cop, or he is like a cop or an FBI agent, or a stoner, It's probably not going to work.
Yeah,
and like we said, that loving Keanu, like we love Keanu, but there's a lot of Keanu movies where we're just like, ooh, like he's not great. Like believe it, or not, like he's billed as a romantic lead. He's, mm-hmm. He doesn't really make good romance movies.
I think there's something for Keanu. We were maybe trying to approach it as he's the same age as Cage. They sort of have similar types of success. They're sort of seen the same way online.
They're both made fun of online.
Yeah, they're both made fun of online, and so we wanted to kind of compare and contrast them to a degree with that. But then it just became all Keanu, because there's just so much volume to that, and there's just a lot. Yeah,
they're
a lot
the same
we were not
year.
Expecting.
They started acting the same year. They both had exactly 72 movies when we started. It was just like serendipity. Like it all lined up, and then we like got halfway through, and we're like, oh boy.
Yeah, and there's a guy where I think, as much as I love Keanu, there's some performances where I'm like, okay, he's nailing this. He's really bringing it home. And then there's others.
And then you watch Dracula, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Yeah, there's others like, where I'm more like, okay, this must be how a lot of people view Cage sometimes. It's like, I get that from Keanu. I see, you know.
Because he's so one-dimensional?
Yeah,
he's not the
greatest actor.
Things.
You know, he's just not. He's just very charismatic. He has a bag of tricks. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a very small bag. But what he can do is so amazing. Like Point Break, Speed, like his cop roles are incredible. So like he really doesn't need to be a good dentist or professor or you know what I'm saying. Like he can just be a cop. That's
he's
fine.
He's played a dentist. That wasn't just like a.
He has actually played a dentist.
But he's also really good as like what we call. So at the end of every podcast, like when we catch up, when we quote unquote catch up on an actor. We have an award show. So, like, we did the Cage Awards, we did the Keanu Awards. So, for Cage, we did the Golden Peaches because there's peaches in three or four different movies. For Keanu, we did the Golden Hot Dogs. And so, for Keanu, in a category that we did that we didn't do for Cage is Best Archetypal Role. So, we did the three good ones were like FBI, agent slash cop, dead girl.
Third dead blonde girl, maybe?
Yeah. Might, same girl over and over
might
again.
Be the same girl from before, yeah.
But, like, blank slate. Like, if you look at him in The Matrix, the reason he works in The Matrix is because, like, he's this guy in a new world. And, like, you believe he's a guy who knows nothing. Like, you're just like, oh.
Yeah.
He's a dummy. Like,
he plays a really good
Because he is for us,
yeah,
right?
Yes. Exactly. Yes. And I think that's why a lot of, like, I mean, obviously I think he's an attractive dude, so, like, you're going to fill the seats for the women, but I think a lot of guys appreciate that about his acting. Is like, you could literally see yourself as that guy because you could just imprint yourself on him because he is such
a
blank.
That term again.
That's the term of the day. I think last time we recorded, what was the term? Witch hunt or fake news?
No, it was witch hunt.
Witch hunt, because we almost watched Season of the Witch, but... All right, so here's his chance to get off the island, if only he could fly.
Yeah, so this is the plane that he arrived on the island in, but we think that they killed the pilot and they also dismantled the plane. So they're like, hey, good luck getting out of here.
But even if they hadn't dismantled the plane, could he fly it himself?
How different really is driving a motorcycle from flying a seaplane? Probably the same.
He'd probably take off.
He'd probably ride it on the water.
Landing's
hard.
Because I feel like there's no, like, you don't... Yeah, like you can go left or right on the seat, like it's just open. So if you just go straight and then you somehow figure out how to like pull back and like lift up, it's just, you know, I guess staying in the air and then like safely leaving.
Oh, she's in this movie too. I keep
Frances
keep popping up. Yeah. Yeah. We still haven't met the main.
Would you consider that the beach? The water side he's by? It's not like a beach.
I don't know. It's more of a coast.
I already won.
You already won. What are you trying to fish for here? I need Cage to work out, and I'll have won.
I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I'm going to get a couple more, I can tell you that much. Cage is on the phone. He was on the phone earlier.
I'm going to look this up real quick. I want to see who else is coming up, what her name was.
So there's Lily Sobieski. There's Frances Conroy. There's...
Ellen Burstyn.
Oh, Ellen Burstyn. That's Ellen Burstyn's
right.
The one in charge of the island.
She's in charge. Okay. I kind of like how the movie sort of doles out their stars like that. Like, every 20 minutes, we're getting, like, a new character. It's, like, it's confusing Cage, and it's keeping the story kind of flowing.
That's also like, hey, we have Frances Conroy for 3 days. What 20 minutes of the movie can we put her in? Oh, here, this 20 minutes.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit like that. Like, we have, like, where was Lily Sobieski when he got to the island for the first couple hours? Like, we didn't...
Because they never interact until that final scene where they're all together. Like, they're all
which
separate.
They've most likely filmed first, because they had everybody together, like, on that same day.
Oh, look, that's straight up Handmaid's Tale, too.
Oh, yeah, look at that.
See, Chris is like, this is his first one. He just gets it. I mean, I don't like that he. I don't like how little he likes Cage, but he gets it.
I gotta say, I haven't seen that many Cage movies, so I'm just kind of I've only seen the highlights of his face.
For you.
I feel like that's a common thing just in general now when people are chiming in. Like, I kind of tried to make it a point early on, like, back when Ocean's 11 came out, I was, like, kind of trash-talking it, and then I saw it, and I was like, oh, this movie's amazing. And ever since then, I kind of tried not to trash a movie I hadn't seen or anything, and I feel like people haven't seen Cage enough to really trash him, or anything, you know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like
I've
you've
seen Raising
a lot
Arizona,
of this work,
which is great.
And then I saw Face Off,
which is awesome.
And I was like...
Wait, that's it? Your batting average is ridiculously high, I can tell you that much. Like, you know,
I'll
you're,
send you a little
you're not getting
off
the plate a lot, but when you get up there, you are crushing
really
the
seeing it, yeah. I felt like I saw the highs and lows, but I could be wrong.
No, you saw the highs.
The highs.
Yeah, you've seen the highs so far.
So, I mean, I don't know, like, Face Off, he is playing Cage, but then he's playing as Travolta. Well, Travolta's playing as Cage, and he's playing as Travolta playing as Cage.
That's a whole problem, not problem with the movie, but that's how it can be a little tedious, is that Cage isn't playing himself, he's playing someone else, and so...
But that makes it better.
Oh, I like that about it. I'm just saying it can make... I can understand why people find that film tedious, is because of, you know, they're playing each other.
Well, because both of them are playing such outsized versions of each other.
Yeah, that... Mm-hmm. Right. And it's like, I don't know, I kind of feel like Travolta's Cage is a little better than Cage's Travolta in that movie, and I don't... It pains me to say that so much, but... I feel like Cage is someone you could do an impression of easier, too. I mean, my Travolta is basically just like, Mr. Cotta. You know, like, what more is there?
That's
like,
another thing. Mike drops so many impressions, and it's staggering.
They've sort of fallen off, but, like, the show was at a point, like, hosted by me, Joey, and, like, an impressionist.
Yeah. What was the one that I did last time? Because I don't do impressions, because I can't. Like, I know that I can't, and I don't try. But I did one last time, and you're like, that's actually pretty good. And I was like, what? What was it? It wasn't Michael Caine. You look at Michael Caine, though.
I don't know.
You won't bury another Batman.
I won't bury another Batman is the line.
I was like, that's a terrible movie. Doesn't sound like him at all. It sounds like you.
I've been watching a lot of Graham Norton clips online because he just gets the most incredible, eclectic group of guests together.
All together.
And Michael Caine was on, and he's like, the way you do a Michael Caine impression is you say, my cocaine.
My cocaine?
Yeah. And that's... That's basically now everyone could do a Michael Caine impression. My cocaine.
Yeah, so, it's not bad.
That's it.
Was the Graham Norton show that Zac Efron was on where he like it was the pole sideways?
Oh, I didn't see that clip, but I watched Tom Hiddleston do like De Niro in front of De Niro. So yeah, that was tense, but he pulled it off.
Did De Niro go for it?
De Niro was into it, yeah. I mean, I don't know if he was just going along with it because he was on the couch.
Speaking of De Niro,
Graham Norton's like, you've got no choice, but...
Speaking of De Niro impressions, as we're recording this week was the 4-year anniversary of Neighbors.
Whoa.
We got the whole De Niro party.
You talking to me?
Hey, Falker, you talking to me?
What did I just recently watch? The King of Comedy. Have you seen King of Comedy? Mm-hmm. Okay, that is one of my favorite Scorsese movies, but I think that's top 5 De Niro performances. He plays a struggling comedian who is like obsessed with Jerry Lewis, who plays like a Johnny Carson type of character.
Okay.
And he basically, in order to get on his show to do his set, he kidnaps him. It's like the ultimate black comedy, like stalker fan.
Sounds good.
It's great. Yeah.
There were a couple of movies like when Jerry Lewis died. I was like, there's a couple of movies like that, and like, was he in It's a Mad World? Was that him?
He was in it very shortly.
There's like a couple. I was like, oh, I haven't seen any of these. I should see.
But
then like you're like, oh wait, Jerry Lewis was also like a terrible, terrible human being.
Yeah.
Who, like would just be shitty to women and like say women aren't funny and all this different stuff. And it's like, maybe I shouldn't watch.
The Bellhop is such a great movie, though. It's almost one of those films where you're like, well, I'll still watch Mad Max because of all the things that Mel Gibson said. Like, I have to let some things go, you know? Like, I mean, I'm not never going to not watch, like, The Road Warrior again, you know?
I know.
I remember the first time I saw this wondering what the hell was going on with those red helmet things.
Yeah, but now we know. It's Handmaid's Tale.
Well, it's actually, they're bee handlers, right? They have, like, the beehives and stuff.
Oh, boy.
And I think the other men on the island, they're all mutes, right?
Yep,
they've had, like, their tongue cuts
cut out.
Yeah. See?
Wow, he's superhuman strength and speed.
He just upset the natural selection that the man was supposed to get bludgeoned by all those logs.
They're basically neutered.
Yeah.
I'm going to cross off wacky wardrobe for the bee handlers. I don't remember Wacky Wardrobe.
We're
going to
get there anyway when he puts the bear costume on.
Also true.
I mean, he's literally going to dress up as a bear and run through the woods in this movie.
It's awesome.
I remember on the episode of the podcast trying to be like, oh yeah, that harkens back to old, like, Grimm's fairy tales and stuff where, like, humans would transform into animals and save people. And, like, I was talking out of my ass so far in that episode, which is one of my favorite episodes we've done, I think.
With Matt Holly Gore.
Yeah. That's a really fun episode.
Why don't they just kill him already?
Well, because they need to sacrifice
ritual.
Him.
Ritual.
Oh,
they can't just kill him. They need to, like, you'll see. There,
okay.
But, like, there is the Wicker Man that they're going to later, spoiler alert, burn him in.
I think a good question, though, is...
Because he's annoying everybody. I can imagine just be like, all right, we don't need you walking around anymore.
Why not lock him up? Or,
yeah.
Because then, the other thing is, like, then there would be a movie.
Well, no, I know that, but it's just a little strange that they've... He seems to have gotten there a little early. He seems to have gotten to the island, like, a day early or something.
Oh, I was going to cross off montage when there's the montage of flashbacks.
And suddenly there are just tons of bees everywhere.
Also, keep the bike. Ride the bike.
Nice honeycomb visual. Yeah.
But I also mean, you can't get off the island with a bike.
Try and swim to a closer island or something. I don't know. There's so many bees now.
Well, unless you're Charlize in Arrested Development, you can just drive to London.
Maybe part of it is the ritual is we have to drive him crazy, too. I wish that was said. I wish there was just a little more lip service to the rites of passage or whatever they're... Oh!
There she is again.
Is she real or is it a vision?
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Another flashback, this time from the truck's perspective.
It's rare that you get truck POV in a movie.
I mean, this in Duel is probably it, right?
I'm also going to cross off Cage Starts Running because he ran across the highway there. Have you won yet? Because I won twice already.
No, I'm not going to win this round, I could tell. There's no singing. Well, Cage doesn't sing.
Waking up in his bed, too, like, just over and over again. Sort of like Keanu in that way, Follow White Rabbit.
Very disorienting. How did I get to my bed? How did I get out of these clothes? I never noticed that guy before. The butler.
It's a servant, yeah. I mean, subservient.
Oh. Kind of got a little bit of a David Hyde Pierce thing happening without the glasses. Oh, he got stung. It's a good thing he's not allergic.
No, he is allergic.
But then he would need, like, an EpiPen or something.
They just said he used his kit.
Oh, okay. Wow.
But she
can't
said,
even
no, no,
follow
no.
it.
They handled it the old way.
I'm watching it, and I can't even follow it.
Well, to be fair, we're an hour in, and we haven't really paid much attention to the movie.
True.
But I do think this is one of our best episodes yet. We're covering all the big themes.
Do they say what the old way is? Did they lop off his penis?
No. Maybe.
I think they would go there if they could. I don't think that the filmmakers wanted to.
Because this is also only rated
PG-13. Yeah, the people. Yeah,
so they can't go too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Although we are watching the unrated cut.
Well, what's and that's just because when they pour the bees on his head. That's the only thing that got cut out of the theatrical cut,
which is dumb.
But what's weird, maybe it's not weird, but what's strange about the original one is like there's just if I recall, like wall to wall nudity. Like there's lots of like sexual. It's very sexual. The first one is much more about the that rite of passage than like the actual harvest. And this one, they just bounced all of that stuff, and they're just like, nah, let's just try and make it a straight-up horror movie.
Who directed the original one?
I don't know.
Dylan beat this one. So,
okay.
So the more movies that we do for the podcast, the more weird crossovers that we did. We did this movie for Charlize called The Life and Death of Peter Sellers. And it's terrible, because Peter Sellers is a garbage person. And I don't know if you realize this, but like whenever it's like a biopic of a man, generally the moral is... Hey, they're a garbage person. Hey, you know this guy that you might have liked? Hey, you know Johnny Cash walked the line? Well, he was terrible. Let us show you beating his wife and whatever. Poor Reese Witherspoon. So we watched Life in the Future.
That wasn't his actual wife.
June Cash Carter?
No, Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, yeah, not his actual wife. But we watched Life in the Future. Terrible. But Charlize plays this woman, Britt Eklund,
mm-hmm.
and weirdly is known for the original version of this. We're like... mind blown. Not really a connection, but sort of a kind of a whatever, sort of a kind of a connection.
And here she is. That's who Charlize plays.
So really pretty.
Looks a lot like Charlize to begin with.
Yeah. There she is. Ellen Burstyn.
Yep.
I wonder if we were paying closer attention to this. I wonder, like, I feel like, because her outfit, very natural colors and everything.
You know, it's like honey, because yeah. She's the queen bee. Because they raise bees so there, much. And she's
it's
the queen.
Such a good movie.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream. Did she get the Oscar for that?
I don't know.
Because that's the segment of that movie that I can't watch anymore. Like, everyone's like, oh, the drugs and the other thing. And it's like, no, her segment is what tweaks me out when I'm watching that movie the most. Like, just freaky and scary and just, it's like a constant fever dream.
Another fun part about doing these is that, like, we each tell the other one, like, five movies. Like, you have to watch this movie. And I'm like, I'm never going to watch. Like, it's just, there's too many movies. There's too many movies.
Yeah, I think that's another thing, too, is, like, a reason I don't remember everything about this is because, like, I have to make room for other stuff.
Oh,
like, Cage had a new movie coming out. I have to make room for that.
No,
sorry,
I have the worst memory about movies. I can still remember way too many Limp Bizkit lyrics, but I don't know, like, vice presidents or state capitals or, like, remember what happens at the end of The Wicker Man.
I forgot Limp Bizkit was even a band until you said
Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water.
They had that good song. I like that one with Method.
You know, Fred Durst is directing a movie, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, he's got all that Limp Bizkit money. Got to do something with it.
No, I think he's got no more of that Limp Bizkit money, which is why he's doing this. Although, I don't know.
Limp Bizkit was like, they exploded on the scene, and then they vanished without a trace. I remember their original tours. They put like a giant toilet out on stage or something?
Of course they were. Wait, did you ever see them?
No, but I would see. When I was in high school, they were still airing MTV and stuff. So, like, I remember.
Did you ever own a red Yankees hat?
Did I own a red Yankees hat?
Like Fred Durst has in the Nookie video.
Oh God, no!
Did you have a puffy
hat? No. Wait. Okay. Hold on. But this was much earlier. So this was 1992. I had a Raiders jacket, a starter's coat.
Oh,
a Raiders jacket,
NWA style.
Exactly.
There you go.
But I was a white kid from the suburbs, and I was 12 years old. Like, what was I doing?
Rap is an industry because white kids like you.
That's
buy
exactly
rap
right.
Albums.
I remember when Crisscross was on in Living Color. The next day, all so these is, people showed
is,
up to school
to
with their clothes backwards.
This is one to keep in mind that Mike is 8 years older than me, and like his entire world of references is like, nope. I know. All I know about them is that they wear the clothes backwards.
Yeah.
I can't name a song by them. I don't
jump.
Know.
Jump.
Oh, okay.
The Daddy Mac will make it jump. Okay. I was spinning that well into the 2000s, but.
Oh yeah, Mike's also a DJ. I was gonna make a bad joke that Brian actually did at the beginning of Rocky III, or Kyle did. He's the rapper.
Oh yeah,
the,
yeah,
or
yeah.
Whatever.
I'm surprised I didn't pick up on that being the DJ and everything.
Yeah.
Did they sharpen her teeth to make them kind of vampiric? Vampiric? I mean, or is that her teeth?
I honestly don't know.
Let me check. You know, I wouldn't.
Is she immortal?
See, that's. I wouldn't be surprised if they did something subtle like that because she is supposed to be. Oh, I see it now.
What do you mean subtle like that? Like she. Chris is barely paying attention to the movie. He's picking up on.
Well,
that.
I've seen this three times and I never caught it. I don't know. That might. Yeah. Exactly. Why not start there? I thought
that's a pretty legally actionable response on Vampire Lady.
What
happens to the boys? That depends.
Oh well,
you know,
but he's
be
also
like,
you have to keep in mind he's outside of his jurisdiction. He can't. He's just a highway patrolman in California. He's basically Chips.
But he's still in America. Like this is still America.
Is it or is Summer's Island zone? Is it like Peoria?
Oh, so like
maybe
yeah.
It's in international waters.
Right. They could. Right. Yeah. Immunity. Diplomatic immunity.
Bear plump, bee plump.
What?
I'm trying to fit in like bear or bees into a pun into diplomatic immunity. Diplomatic immunity.
That's a stretch.
It's a stretch. The only thing that Mike and I like better than doing podcasts is coming up with names for other podcasts that we're not going to do. I don't want to do this podcast, but we came up with Gyllenhaalics Anonymous. Just because it's a great name.
I want to do that show, though.
We're not going to.
No.
I mean, if you guys are doing, like, a series on babe men, he's pretty babe.
He is. So, I didn't tell you this. So, my friend's wife works for Penguin Publishing. Shout out, Penguin. And they apparently put out a coloring book of all hunky men. And the book, I think, is called Swoon. And in that book, Zeph, Channing, Gosling, Keanu...
Oh,
Cage not in it.
All the ones you do podcasts about, though.
But they're all in there, and like they're all just like, and so there's like little facts about them. There's like a color, a picture you can do, and there's like a circle out of 10. It's like rate them, and then for Gosling, it says we did it for you. We know he's a 10 out of 10. It's great. It's so good.
And you wonder why like all of your listeners are like, teenage girls.
We love our female listeners.
No, I'm not saying that it's bad. I'm just saying, you know, there's no need to wonder why.
No, but we say it on the podcast all the time. Joe and I are the gayest straight men you'll ever meet. Like, we are infatuated with these men, but, you know, not into them.
Yeah, it's healthy. I mean, Magic Mike's, I avoided that movie for a long time, and I saw it. It's like one of my favorite movies now.
You watched XXL, right?
And then I watched XXL. It's still very good. It's not as good as the original, though.
I saw a trailer.
Oh, my God.
But Magic Mike's one was like, oh, I thought I knew what, like... what it meant to be a man. Like,
no, now
I'm learning like all these new things about like
Magic Mike XXL is
even
like,
that too.
The most sex positive, hopeful, optimistic, just fun. Like it's in a movie about strippers. Like it is. It has great messages and it's just so much fun. And also, if you're into like watching these impossibly ripped guys do impossible dance moves, like. Also great.
Well, Channing Tatum does a head spin on a chair while a girl's sitting on it in Magic Mike's 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he is a legit amazing dancer.
Yeah.
The stuff he does in Magic Mike's is just all him.
Yep.
And it's not a... He doesn't have a...
No stunt double? None of that?
No, because he was a stripper. He came from the world of stripping. Did you know that or did you not know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was a stripper. Like, Magic Mike is, in a way, sort of like a autobiography. Like, it was written by his friend. And, like, he is a former stripper who, you know, became an actor...
Crazy.
And now...
I thought he'd been famous forever, Channing Tatum.
He's been in movies for 12 years, 13 years.
Also, did something happen to his body where he used to be skinny and then he got roided out?
He was very lean.
We dive into this a lot on our podcast, on those podcasts, but we talk about different body types. Like, he's always been, like, a bigger guy. Like, just not, like, not heavier, but, like, he's got a bigger frame.
Uh-huh.
And so I think, you know, he was really, really skinny in his early movies, like Havoc and Step Up and everything. And then I think just over time... I think just the demands of Hollywood. Like, if you're a leading man, you need to look. You need to be able to sell this movie with your shirt off.
At one point, he was G.I. Joe, so literally had to like bulk up, mass up, all that stuff and things. So, yeah, that was huge. It's too bad that G.I. Joe wasn't a better movie because that would have been his franchise.
I've never seen it.
I grew up with the cartoon, so I was like, I was right at the point where I was like, okay, I'm going to go see this. I'm going to check this out. Got to be better than Transformers, right? And it's like right up there with Transformers.
What we found doing the All His Movies podcast for Shia is in the Transformers movies, when the robots are not on screen, actually pretty good movies. The robots come on screen, it's like, oh, I'm not interested in it.
If that movie was called People,
if it was
it was just about the people,
about
in
Sam Witwicky and his parents, it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like it's like they're cool. Like,
they make some nice jokes.
Yeah,
nice jokes.
Megan Fox is pretty good in the first one.
Shia definitely feels like a prepubescent teenager running around, like, trying not to get caught doing stuff.
And then the robots show up, and it's like,
oh, Cage underwater.
Do we have Cage swims?
I mean, I'm sure it's a thing.
I do like this music.
Yeah, that's the one thing about doing the commentaries we don't get to re-experience is some of the scores and things like that, because we generally have the volume way down.
But, you know, like, when we did the last two at my house, we had the volume up louder, and actually you can sort of hear it in the background. Like, it kind of works.
Okay. Well, you could do that when you listen to actual Blu-rays, too, sometimes. I mean, even the earlier ones, you can kind of hear them watching the movie.
Yeah.
So you're going, that's fine. I'd love to know how long he gets stuck under there.
Probably a while. I don't have extreme facial expression crossed off, and I feel like that's an oversight.
Oh, absolutely, because even when he said, what's in the bag, a shark?
Okay.
Like, when he said shark, he, like, his whole face changed for a minute.
Here, I mean, there's extreme
This is the third or fourth flashback to the same event.
At least.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is like Rocky-esque in terms of his flashbacks. So back in December, Mike and I, along with Kyle and Brian from the PSL Poppin' Podcast, was it this past December? Or was, no, it was last December. It was like a year and a half ago.
It was almost a year. Yeah, it was over a year now.
We went up to Yonkers, to the Draft House in Yonkers, and we saw all 7 Rocky movies back-to-back.
In a row.
It...
In one day.
Almost killed Mike.
It was rough.
I'm sure you've seen, just being a person who's alive, you've probably seen at least a handful of Rocky movies. I don't know if you realize what percentage of those movies is flashbacks to earlier movies until you watch them all in a row. You're like, oh, I just saw half of this movie.
Yeah.
2 hours
Again.
Ago.
Yeah, uh-huh. Right. Yeah, you're literally rewatching half of the last movie.
Especially Rocky Balboa, that one that came out like 10 years ago, because it had been like 15 years since the 5th one and probably 20 years since the one that anybody had seen.
Yeah.
They were
they
just
had
like,
to remind people.
They
had to remind
like,
them.
So, like,
every
literally
scene.
Half that movie is references and flashbacks to earlier movies. It's like, yeah, but like, we just watched them.
Yeah, as much as I love and did an episode of Rocky 3, which is a great one, I tell people,
Thunderlips,
you really just need to see the first one, the fourth one, and then Creed, and that is like the Rocky trilogy for me.
We wanted to do one podcast where we watch Rocky 4 every week for a year, but there's another podcast called The Worst Idea of All Time or The Greatest Idea of All Time?
It's either the worst or the best. I think it's the worst
and
idea of all time.
And they do the same thing. Like, they did...
Grown Ups 2.
They did Grown Ups 2, they did Sex and the City 2. Then they did We Are Your Friends, which is a Zac Efron movie where he plays a DJ, which legitimately
like
amazing.
Of course we're going to like that.
And so they just did that for a year. We're like, we don't want to like ape their style. But...
Yeah,
so that's kinda... like when we started Cage Club, we did a little bit of research. There were a couple...
Just pause for a quick freak
just
out.
Pause. There were a couple other Cage podcasts, but they were, like, infrequent. And I really do feel like, for all the shows on our network, the ones that we do, the ones that other people do, I'm like, there's two things. All I want is two things. And if you do these two things, you too, Chris and Leanne, could you guys have podcasts on our network? I want you to sound good. Like, we know how to record and have good sound quality, so we know how to, like, easy. Do that, and hit a consistent release schedule. Whether you release it every month, every week, every 2 weeks, whatever you want to do, there is a real value to people who listen to podcasts, whether it's 5 people or 5 million people or whatever, that... when you are expecting a podcast to come out, it better be there.
Yeah.
And so my only thing is really, and like, you know, we've put out 500 episodes, and I think maybe 3 of them have been late by like a day. Like, it's not been,
if that,
it's not
yeah.
been, that's why Monkey Club died, because Monkey Club just could not
maintain a scan schedule. Yeah.
But it's just, when people are listening, just
okay.
hit your, terrifying. Hit your release schedule.
What was that?
No explanation, just one-eyed guy, and then Kate just like, sure, leave.
Yeah.
What?
Like, that's normal. Like, I was expecting to see that. Okay. Little honeycomb nod on the
point.
Door there.
Wait,
here's another one.
Release schedules.
He's totally cool with this also?
Well, that's Lily. Is that Lily or
no,
is that
no,
Lily?
No. He's a little more freaked out by that, but...
the beard.
Oh, there you go, Joey. But he's not as freaked out as I would be if I saw opened a door and first saw a man with one eye with all these welts and then a lady with a bee beard.
Beard.
With a beard. And then look how Ellen Burstyn sleeps.
In a queen's hive, in a queen's nest.
But she's got all of her drones around her. Yeah. All right. I feel like it's starting to ramp up again here.
Okay, I do feel like, also, if he's exploring the whole house and stuff,
yeah.
It was misleading because I thought that he was walking up the
staircase
to see her, and then he's gone? She's told by somebody?
So he got scared out of the house, probably,
by Ellen Burstyn. By Beard. And then we got Jackie Sharp wearing a bird mask just biking around town.
And she's brunette, too, so...
So is she good or is she not?
I don't know. Does that make her... Why is she talking to him like it's like King Arthur's time? Do you think they've been there since like the Middle Ages like that? Like medieval times?
I hope so. I like that he's had a gun apparently this entire time and this is the first time he's pulled it an hour and 18 minutes into the movie.
He's finally found a use for it. He's got to point it at a woman. That is like... It's just to reinforce. If you think that's bad, he's going to sock one in a few minutes.
It is he.
Oh,
so Shining Twins grown up.
Now that now I remember. So yes, the girl in the beginning really did die. She had a twin sister.
Oh, that's right.
And that's who they've been using to mess with Cage on the island. He's actually been seeing the twin sister of the girl.
Man, what a deep movie.
God, so convoluted.
Did he need the bike that badly?
I want to know, can we go to this filming location?
It's awful pretty.
I mean, I want to shoot my own Wicker Man there. Now, here are all the guys. This is like all the guys on the island, probably.
Oh, we are mere moments away from him punching a woman, though. I think it's in this scene.
Doesn't he do it twice? Does he do
it? Oh, there's a couple times. I think he might kick a woman. I think he might punch a woman.
It's jarring when it happens. It is. I mean, even when you know it's happening.
You're never really prepared for a man to punch a woman in a movie, but
just, man, he is strutting around.
Is that Amy Poehler?
No. But I recognize her. Murder charges.
There's the one F-bomb for the movie.
I am out of my jurisdiction.
You're one of them.
It's true. Fooled you.
I love... There's so many things about this I love. I love that the girl is hiding in the closet the entire time. Like, they're like, oh, Cage is going to show up at some point. She's like, get in the closet, hide in the closet.
And mess with him.
I like that she falls out. I like that the mom thinks it's the funniest thing in the world.
Look at him just like... Now he's really...
He's looking for the girl.
I know, but you're not supposed to just
There's
like...
There's twins. Everybody's twins now.
It's getting all kicky. You know...
He doesn't punch a horse.
That's in... that. Yeah. Blazing Saddles. Yeah. Mongo walks up to the horse and punches the horse. And the way they shot that was they filmed it in reverse. So the horse actually stood up.
Oh.
And they filmed it in reverse, so it looked like they punched him.
Movie magic. I like that we've now given more insight into Blazing Saddles than we have in Wicker Man.
Well... That's how
see,
we
see
do.
His hair is getting more frazzled.
Yeah.
Is this a beach? That's a beach.
No. Is that a beach?
That's a beach.
Is that black
it's
sand?
Like a rocky beach.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you your double win. I wouldn't go sunbathing on that beach, though.
No, but not every beach.
And the plane is completely sunk? Wait, it's too shallow.
No, man.
Did it sit? Oh, here's the dead dude.
Ah. What happened to his mouth?
Birds?
Oh, it's wicker. There's wicker in his hands and there's in his mouth. Oh, I just put that together.
Like, as bad as... if you say this movie is bad or whatever, like, I see where you might be coming from, but like, it's undeniably creepy at times. Like, there's, like, the kids, the animal masks, like, it's...
Yeah, it's creepy.
It's unsettling.
Yeah. I just wish everyone was on the same page when they were making this, you know? Because if Cage was removed from this, like, it would be a... I feel like it would be an actually workable, kind of creepy horror thing. But Cage is just in his own movie.
I mean, well, he's in the Neil LaBute's movie, and then everybody else is in a different movie. This is the woman he punches.
Oh, good. Is that Kathy Bates?
No.
No, but she should totally should be on this island.
Kind of looks like Kathy Bates.
Yeah. Yeah. He is just... No more words for this guy.
Like, she's just giving him so much eye sass.
Oh, shit!
What the
hell? I told you it was coming!
I didn't realize it was without words. I thought they were going to exchange words.
Even knowing you can't be prepared. Yeah, that is...
Jesus.
That is one of the most shocking scenes.
Just because he's frustrated, I guess?
Yeah. There's something about the silence, the, like...
The eye shade that she's throwing...
The tension, and then it just comes out of nowhere. The last thing I was expecting was for him to throw a punch.
He's a lefty punch, too. He's not a lefty in real life, is he, or is he?
Oh, do you think he went that far into his character? Where he's like, this character's gonna be a lefty. I've only played a lefty twice.
Oh, here he is, putting on the bear costume.
That he just finds lying around. Oh, but first he has to fight another girl.
It's Lily, I think, right? Or is it not?
Why is he putting on a bear costume?
Unclear. It's just there.
Why is she attacking him?
Well, I think she is now trying to restrain him.
Well, the sacrifice is beginning.
This is the ritual now. It's starting. So they have to, you know, confine him. And
I mean, they've shown him that he's, you know, he's cinematically strong.
It's a kick.
They're like one-on-one.
He just kicked a woman into the wall and you didn't even bat an eye.
Well, after you see the first punch,
that's
it's
true.
There's so much to absorb. I think the costume was supposed to be for the first woman he punched out. She was going to put the bear on and be the bear in the parade. And so now he's going to put the suit on and sneak around pretending to be her.
Oh, and everybody else.
Spoiler alert, does not work out.
No. Yeah, because I think she just shows up and is like, that's not me or something. She says something.
Also, wouldn't they have a Wiccan ceremony at night?
Yeah, because you would, I mean, the fire would be way more impressive.
Because also, he wouldn't dig up a grave at night. They're kind of flipping the time.
Oh, this movie flips the script on everything you think you know. You think you know about Wicker Man and Wicker Men and ceremonies and whatever.
I think the first half of the movie, during the first time we watched it for the podcast, I was like, yeah, they should really confine this guy to like a room or something. And then the second half, I was like, yeah, this should be happening during the day and that should be happening at night. Like, yeah. Those are glaring. Looks like he got eaten by a bear for a second.
Nobody around can see me.
Oh, boy. Because it's still sad that he thinks he can trust her.
Right.
She's so pretty. You would think that you can trust her.
That's how she honeypots you. Oh. What's that from? It's from a Channing movie, I think.
Is it? I always thought that was just to get your hand stuck in the
it's from a Zeph movie.
But that's like a saying.
Wait, they can't see his face in there? I just saw his face.
His is the only costume that isn't like a papier-mâché.
There's his face!
Yeah.
No? Right there, that's a dude.
I think it looks like he's being eaten by a bear to me.
Wow. Oh, no, it's from The Interview.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, that's right. When they
we're talking to Kim Jong Il.
Yeah, and they
Kim Jong Un.
They're sweet. The third woman assaulted.
Go. See, they think that they're about to burn her, but she is just
bait.
Exactly.
Did they kill the twin?
Well, the one girl died. This is the other girl. This is the twin, right? The twin.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're still unclear about the sort of the bait at the very beginning. Like, were they really trying to escape the island, or were they just there to get Cage's attention and sort of be a sacrifice, self-sacrifice, right, for the ritual or something? Part of me still wants to believe that they were truly trying to escape from the island.
But they don't seem like in a rush. She's very calm.
But she drops
the
doll. Yeah.
No, but the little girl's like a little annoying little girl. She's throwing the doll out the window.
Yeah.
The girl is also like, the girl probably doesn't know what's going on. The mom is just like, oh, I'm sorry, she does this. She's buckled
so,
in.
So, on one level, I guess the movie's doing its job, and I don't know what the hell's going on.
Is that doing its job, or is that not doing its job?
Well,
because that's never explained?
No.
The whole beginning thing that
you
keep flashing back to?
The moment of so important that he keeps flashing back to it three times, you never get a straight answer on. He's finally got some cell service.
Cage on the phone. Who's Pete?
So that might be the guy with the mustache at the police station that we saw, because there's only like one other actor in this movie
fucking two guys.
Yeah. Because the rest of their tongues cut out. They couldn't speak.
Man, I have almost filled up. I almost did a blackout of this card.
That is crazy. This is the big finale here.
Yep. Oh, good. She's in on it, too.
Yeah, the final piece. She's lured them.
Did I do it right, Mommy? Oh, Rowan, you were so good.
I will shoot all of you in the face.
You know what I wish? I wish, I mean, it wouldn't be this movie. I wish he pulled a Keanu at the end of Devil's Advocate and just like, oh, you need me?
Oh, and killed himself. Wow.
Then it resets.
And then you just see, like, the entire, like the crops just scorch in an instant because it
and there's
supernatural.
No, there's no Wicker Man in the movie called The Wicker Man. I like the fish mask.
I don't get the fish though. Out of everybody, I mean, I don't get why they're wearing.
So
here, masks,
here's
but,
where
I mean,
we're getting
the fish
all
just,
the answers. You've always lived here, Nicolas Cage.
She's got the big bruise.
Because he punched her in the face.
Well, yeah. You should feel proud. You're so noble.
Like, I really do. I mean, if I was in the situation, I don't know what I would do. I wouldn't kill myself. But you have to wonder, like, he's not going to get out of this. Like, he doesn't know that he's not getting out of this. Like,
yeah.
I guess they don't. He doesn't know what they want from him.
Well, he's been trying to piece it together. There's something about a harvest. Something's going down. I mean, the movie just... It sort of feels like it's supposed to be a big twist. Oh, you're the one we're going to kill. But I kind of feel like it's been leading to that. We just don't know how they're going to do it. And when we find that out, that is the shock.
Mm-hmm.
Like what they end up actually doing to him to prepare him for sacrifice.
So betrayed by Willow.
I like her half the light in the day and the night on her makeup with the blue and the white. I wish they were all sort of more symmetrically made up like that, like with the face paint.
I think they probably had a limited makeup budget.
I feel like half of this was shot during a Renaissance fair, like with all of the outfits and everything.
There are more men in this movie than I remember that just don't, you know.
Yeah, especially in
don't
that
talk.
One shot. So, yeah, I guess that's what happens to the boys they have on the island, is that they let them grow up there, but they have to be silent servants.
Oh, boy. See, this is what happens. Like, we finally
wait, those are the people from the station wagon?
Are they?
Oh, my family, God. It kind of looks like?
Could that be?
So here's a dirty little secret about myself. I cannot tell people apart. Hair confuses me. Like, you know, people have face blindness. If Anne went out and like came back a different hair, I'd be like, who's this new person?
Oh, a new photographer.
Like, I don't know what it is. Oh, that's why he also couldn't kill himself.
Oh, they took
all
your
the bullets. Oh, Willow. But I don't know. Like, I can't tell who's who.
But oh, okay. So here's where it cuts in the theatrical version. From here, everything from here on. These next couple moments are not in the theatrical cut. So when they bring these logs in and all of this, it basically just cuts from him kicking a girl, and then all of this is cut out.
But, yeah, now they're going to break his legs.
Oh.
And then they get him ready with the bees.
Yeah, if you thought he was having a rough time up to this point, you...
Yeah, his day is about to get real bad. Oh, speaking of Kathy Bates, didn't she like do that?
Yeah, this is true. Misery, yeah.
Oof. It's okay. The second one's not as bad.
One of us.
That's the whole thing. Be really great though, like if at the end that like the sky opened up and like tentacles came down and like there really was like a god that they prayed to and it was like, I bless you with harvest.
I almost spoiled the movie that the end is like that, but I'm not gonna spoil what it is. You know what I'm talking about, right? Came out like 5 years ago. Horror movie.
Oh yes, okay.
Great movie.
Something about a cabin?
I wasn't gonna say it.
No, so, but that's the one,
yes.
Right? Okay, so that's all.
So, Chris, you've never seen, like, this gif of them, of the bees?
No.
So this is, like, mega popular on the internet.
People use this as, like, a, oh, look, he can't act. But the whole movie's like this. You know, that
right.
It fits in with the world of the movie.
Like,
and actually, that yeah. You know, that's well done.
Yeah.
I would freak out.
There you go.
I think those got to be
out
CG,
out of context,
right?
A lot of things are dumb, you know?
Those got to be CG.
Yeah, oh yeah, that movies. That was pretty bad CGI.
CBI, CBI,
CGB. No.
CDB. Do you remember the book CDB?
No.
There was like a book series like CDB where it's like you could see it's at CDB and there's just like a B flag around and it was all like little sort of like.
Oh, there's the EpiPen. So, I was looking up, you know, I was researching novelizations as I want to do. Because I was like, oh, you know, they're doing Highlander over on Real Bad. Am I ever going to do Highlander 3? I was like, no, but there's an entire series of Highlander novels and Predator novels. I was like, wow.
Independent just, or, like, novelization stuff?
No, like, independent.
Wow.
Okay, so here's where the theatrical cut comes back.
Yeah, so remember when they knocked this, so it's just, all that last stuff that we saw, all that, like, craziness, just wasn't in the theater, so.
Can you imagine? I would have been so, I mean, I wouldn't have, you wouldn't have known, I guess, but, like, why would you cut that out? Like,
was that for to get it to PG-13?
It must have been to get it to PG-13.
I guess the breaking of the legs is pretty brutal.
Yeah, maybe the bees weren't done as a special effect yet. There we go.
There's the titular Wicker Man.
And now you're in the sack.
Yeah, it's the shark sack.
And he's in it.
I'm just going to cross off Cage dies. Because there's no twist ending. He's about to die.
Oh, okay. He doesn't get free.
No, no, no.
So
it's
I wound
it's
up
a
with
great bleak ending for our hero.
Including the middle square, 17.
Wow. I have 8.
That's
well,
it?
I mean, religion and spirituality.
Oh, definitely.
But magic and mysticism?
Yeah.
I still don't have. He didn't smoke or do drugs.
No.
No titular line. No singing. So I like this, too, is that he's being sacrificed with all these other animals, too. It just, like, brings him down a level, I guess. It's like, Cage, you're nothing more than just, like, a goat or a sheep or something.
It's wonderful.
Willow does look pained. She doesn't look like she's enjoying this.
I think...
She's hard to read. She's a tough read.
Is that an actress we know?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I don't recognize her.
And I just said I don't recognize anybody ever.
This is great how they have the little girl light him. That is just like...
That's cold.
Yeah, that's...
Or is it real warm?
Is that his daughter?
Yeah.
I think so.
Is this true?
So he knocked
yeah,
up
that's the
he
conclusion.
Knocked up Willow and she was pregnant with twins?
No, no, not necessarily. Just that there's lots of two. I think it's that they're that they're twins.
I guess
just they're two girls that look alike. I think it's just it's tough. If I mean, I go and drop my nephew off at school in the morning, and just kids just look so much alike. Like blonde kids are blonde kids, brunettes are brunettes.
Hey,
like,
you got my thing.
It's really hard. I do, but only for kids. Like
the drone.
Oh.
More bee stuff.
Now she's into it. And Lily's back. She's covered up her bruises with some makeup.
Lily looks like Evan Rachel Wood, or am I crazy?
No, that's a great call, yeah. You know, Evan Rachel Wood did some interviews after Westworld, looked more like a cyborg in real life than in the show Westworld.
I feel like that's mean.
No, because she had, like, makeup, like in Blade Runner. She had, like, the Pris eyeliner. She was wearing, like a leather, shiny leather jacket.
Thing, like, in Westworld, she's not supposed to look like a robot. She's supposed to look like a person.
Yeah. I follow her on Twitter. I don't know why I follow certain people. I just like Westworld, so I follow her on Twitter.
Dolores.
Is that the same person from Westworld? She looks like the woman from Westworld. The badass drone. Badass... I've only seen one episode of Westworld.
No, I don't think so. She
oh,
was.
They even have an old-timey camera. They don't have a digital camera. They got one from, like, the 1800s.
So now the question is the ending... The ending's not in this version, I don't think, right? It's just... Is it a special feature?
Oh,
the ending...
okay, so in the theatrical cut, there's an extra scene after this before the
Franco.
Credits. Not only James Franco, but it's James Franco and Jason Ritter.
Oh, yeah. Where they're just in that diner where Cage was in the beginning for Johnny Ramone. Because,
that's the movie.
That's the movie. So, it's for Johnny Ramone because Cage was really good friends with Johnny Ramone, and Johnny Ramone was like, hey, do you know this movie, The Wicker Man, like the original? And Cage was like, no, I've never heard of it. And like he's watching, loved it. And so then, that's why he did this.
And Johnny Ramone passed away.
We did an episode about that, Too Tough to Die,
and
tribute to Johnny Ramone.
If you listen to the audio commentary on Wind Talkers, Cage tells a Johnny Ramone story about hanging out with him and stuff like that. So
that's pretty cool.
So
that's why it's for Johnny Ramone, because he introduced Cage to this world of the Wicker Man. But so at the end of the theatrical cut, and there's a special
James Franco is in this.
Yeah, Barkai. Okay, so yeah. They're not in this version. Like, they're credited, but they're not in this.
We could put that scene on after.
So there's a diner they go to, and they're just there, and you see Willow or whoever, like, pick them up. Like, oh, like, hey, like, you're a couple of guys or whatever.
Yeah, Lili Zobieski shows up and is, like, picking up guys at the bar.
So it's gonna, the whole cycle's going to start again.
Yeah, so they were sent out into the world now to find new guys for when the next TARDIS comes.
I gotta say, that sounds like a better ending. Because this is just kind of, yep.
Well, this is a real downer of an ending. Like, this is like a, oh, he just died, like,
and then scene.
Yeah,
we're done.
The other one's a real twist ending, where it's like, here we go again.
That,
like,
sounds better.
Yeah.
Real M. Night Shyamalan.
We gotta stop using him and in reference to twist endings, though, because it's been so long, I feel.
I just think of it because there's that one Robot Chicken episode where they're just like, what a twist.
But then no one else is making twists, so I guess we gotta leave it.
You gotta stay with
to M. Night. We gotta stick with M. Night, yeah. we sit through and watch all the credits, too, because we're never sure there might be a post-credit scene.
We've been surprised by a couple.
Hmm. I'm pretty sure there's not in this one, I know for a fact.
So in Adaptation, which is a terrific movie, it's where Cage plays twins.
Wait, Adaptation?
Yeah.
It's a
movie?
What?
Susan Orlean?
Yes.
Orchid Thief?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't remember he was in that. Okay.
He's the star of it. He plays twins. So you've seen three Cage movies. You've seen three great ones.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay.
So at the end of the credits, it's dedicated to... Oh, no. The beginning of the credits is dedicated to... But at the end, there's a quote from the book that his brother is writing, or the screenplay that the brother is writing.
Yeah.
And, like, so it ends on this, like, quote. It's like, oh, we've never seen that before.
It basically, yeah, it ends... There's a post-credit scene, and then it's a quote from a fake screenplay that his brother's writing in the movie. So it's
called,
like,
the three.
It's like a super... The whole movie is very meta.
Yeah.
And so at the very end, they give you one more jab before you leave the theater.
So the next movie that we're going to do next episode is Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, which is...
crazy.
Maybe the craziest Cage movie that's ever existed.
Crazy.
Wait,
I mean,
it's... Bad Lieutenant was a movie...
Was it from, like, the 70s with Harvey Keitel.
And then,
this is like a spiritual sequel.
So, and then what, Louisiana, what?
Werner Herzog made it.
Port of Call, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Werner Herzog directed it. It is...
Wait, he actually directed this?
No, the next one. The next one we're going to do. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
It's, yeah, he did a Werner Herzog
movie. Not only is it crazy, but it's great.
Wait, is it crazy in this way, where it's just, like, ridiculous?
Sometimes. But I think it's objectively a good movie.
Yeah.
The name just makes it sound like it's going to be awful.
It sounds goofy, yeah.
It's got a problem.
There's a lot of word.
I think the whole, even that it is a bad lieutenant, kind of rubbed people the wrong way to begin with, saying, like, oh, it has nothing to do with Bad Lieutenant. What are you talking about? And so they just kind of took a title and ran with it.
And that's actually, that movie's title is a joke that Paula Tompkins runs with a lot whenever he, like, impersonates Werner Herzog, because there's colons in certain places, but not colons in other places, and just, like, it's a very specific title for really no reason. I think it was originally called, like, Port of Call or something, and then they're like, oh, no, like, let's just, like, make it a Bad Lieutenant.
But they got the rights to make a Bad Lieutenant sequel instead of making, like, a true blue Harvey Keitel sequel. They're like, let's just use the name and make it, like, you know, that happens a lot more often.
Wait, so, like, in the beginning of Reservoir Dogs, when they're talking about True Blue, they're talking about a Harvey Keitel movie?
Why, he was in a movie, True Blue, also?
Wait, what's True Blue? Was that Harvey Keitel?
No, Bad Lieutenant.
What's True Blue?
Oh, I don't know.
You just said it.
Did I? I meant... did I? No, I said...
You said True Blue.
Oh, we're going to have to go to the tape. I thought I said Bad Lieutenant.
You said instead of making a True Blue sequel...
Oh, yeah. Instead of... Yeah.
Oh, you're just using that as a phrase.
Yeah, no, right. Instead of making it a...
An actual sequel.
True sequel, right. Sorry, didn't mean to... Cross your wires
blow
there.
Blow my mind. So there's nothing after there. So we will be back in 2 weeks for Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
And that's how they end.
Thanks, bye.